this is the way that you need to do something. This is the way that you need to load the dishwasher.
Okay, well,
and there's no other way.
Before you throw Jay's under the bus, I was going to throw myself under the bus by saying
all
that
right,
I'm,
all right.
This is one that I have a hard time with, that I'm bad about this one, because I just know the right way to do things.
Wow, look at that. There it is. There it is, ladies and gentlemen.
If you're happy with the same old ways of dating,
if you enjoy sucking at communication,
and you have no desire to improve your romantic life, then our podcast might not be for you.
But if you want some out-of-the-box ideas to deepen your current relationships,
broaden your sexual horizons,
develop a better understanding of yourself,
or learn more about non-monogamy,
then you've come to the right place. I'm Jace.
I'm Emily.
And I'm Dedeker.
And this is the Multiamory Podcast. On this episode of the Multiamory Podcast, we're talking about criticism in relationships. One of the famed four horsemen of the apocalypse from the Gottman Institute, criticism can show up constantly in our romantic relationships. Is there such a thing as good criticism? Can constructive criticism work in relationships, or is it always a drag, man? We talk about all that and more on today's episode.
Oh, I have a question.
What,
Emily, you're the one who researched this episode. Why did you want to cover criticism?
I mean, I think it comes up a lot in relationships. I think it's interesting because I've definitely been accused of being critical at times, but then in the same token, I'm like, but my partner's critical. Mm. Like, they can be critical of me. And I feel like, yeah, my mom was critical of me in my life. But then I also have heard people say, like, well, but it's important to be critical of your partner and of your friends because that's the only way that they'll grow and stuff like that. And I'm like, ugh. But then you hear, like, things out there that say that it's basically the worst thing possible for relationships, that it's the reason why a lot of, like, things stem and breed and contempt and other, you know, bad things happen in relationships. So I don't know. I just thought, yeah, this is an interesting one to touch on. I wanted to kind of delve deeper into it because I do think that so many people accuse each other of being critical in relationships.
Boy, I feel like there's so much to unpack in everything that you just said. I mean, like the thought that people would say, well, you should be critical of your partner is fascinating because I think that there is a lot of truth to that. I don't feel like I've heard it stated so explicitly, but
I think that's how
we're taught to think about it.
Yeah, that other, maybe not specifically critical, but what is that you should always be pushing your partner to improve themselves.
Mm. See, that, yeah,
and
that
so
feels a little
question,
different from just being critical, because
yeah,
like just, I think, like, because I think of like having a critical eye for your relationship and your partner and the people that you spend your time with. I think that's a little different from feeling like you should be the one
to criticize
or to be the one directly responsible for helping your partner improve.
Yeah,
I think that to me is right there, that it's your responsibility, or even that it's good for you to take on the role of being the person pushing them to grow.
Yeah,
it's such a common concept, but
it is.
I would argue
it is really difficult, or slash,
bad.
And not really like a feasible or attainable goal to have. That again, it needs to come from within. And I think maybe there can be like catalysts from partners or people being like, hey, like this is something that one should look at. But to be critical and like say blanket statements about your partner that can sometimes just breed anger and resentment, I think, over time. So I did want to ask and like look at the question of like, what is constructive criticism versus destructive criticism? Because I think that those are two very separate things. And that when people talk about like being critical as a good thing, they're thinking of, well, I'm just being constructive, I'm trying to help someone. But in reality, they're actually like destroying the relationship by the way that they're talking about it or talking about their partner. So, okay. But first, I did want to like look up what the hell is criticism. So in the good old big old book, the big damn book. That's what Steve Easton used to always say. Yeah. So, destructive criticism is criticism performed with the intention to harm someone, disparage and destroy someone's creation, prestige, reputation, and self-esteem. So, yes, in other words, I've seen criticism described specifically as like an attack on a partner's character. So it's a critique. But there's a difference between like specific criticism and then critiques or complaints, which are more like geared towards incidences or issues, but not specifically addressing like a character flaw. So some people will label like a complaint as criticism when it actually isn't one, which is interesting. And it is a good thing. And hopefully we're going to try to like parse out and talk about the difference between both of those, because complaints are not specifically geared towards someone's character. And when it can get destructive is when it starts moving in that direction of a character, like assault, I guess.
So an example might be a complaint might be like you, let me think about how I want to phrase this or how healthier constructively
I
want to
phrase this. Okay,
yeah, a complaint would be something like,
is it specific?
Yeah, so about specifically an instance, like, hey, I'm annoyed because you haven't taken the trash out.
Yes, rather than
the
saying,
last three times that I've asked you to, rather than the criticism, which would be, you are so lazy.
You're lazy.
Yes.
Like, right. Fucking
you
lazy
are so lazy
person.
You never listen. You
never
ignore,
take the trash out. You never do
like,
what I need
you
to do.
You are a terrible roommate, whatever. Add into
yeah,
them.
You don't value our household. You, yeah.
Yes.
Yeah,
yeah,
all those things.
Yeah, you just rely on me to do something, blah, blah,
got
blah.
It.
Like,
okay.
Talking about specifically their
got
character.
It.
So, yeah. Hopefully that's helpful, everyone. Took a moment to get there, but here we are.
I think that the term constructive criticism is interesting because the fact that like destructive criticism is a word that I'm only familiar with because of constructive criticism. And it's just like, okay, that's the opposite of that. Whereas I feel like criticism was a thing first. And then someone at some point was like,
wait.
But maybe there's a way to do this better. Let's call that constructive criticism.
They constructively were like, hey, maybe we should make a different term for this.
Yeah.
Right. So, but I almost want to make the case that criticism by default is kind of this more negative, destructive thing, and that constructive criticism is almost not criticism. It's almost like something else that someone had to come up with a term for.
Interesting. Yeah.
I don't know if that's helpful at all, but I feel like sometimes we can get into this like, well, is this just criticism or is it destructive criticism?
Yeah.
And I would say, no, actually kind of the whole thing's maybe not the best.
Well, okay, so criticism is one of the four horsemen of the apocalypse in relationships. And from the articles that I read, it is almost always the one that like leads to the other three. So can we go over one more time like what they are? So criticism and stonewalling. I know they're at like opposite ends. Contempt is one. What is the third?
Defensiveness/blaming.
Yes. Okay. Which is funny because this talks about also defensiveness, that there's like a cycle of criticism and defensiveness.
Yeah. That makes sense. It's like, this is sort of the gateway drug into it.
Yeah.
And this is so common.
Yeah.
We talked about this a little bit last week, but it's like, there's this idea that we're either, entitled to be more critical of our partners than we are of other people, of our romantic partners, or that like we're more responsible for their actions than we are for anyone else's, except for like maybe our children. And so therefore, and that's another person that we're taught to be critical of, or
totally.
It's considered normal to be critical of because we're helping them, right? We're helping them grow. We're guiding them in what to do. But often both with children and with partners, that can lead us down a road that's not helpful, that leads to defensiveness and can be destructive to the relationship. Like there's this negative cycle of criticizing, which, you know, like Emily was saying, causes defensiveness. And again, we'll get to that more later.
So in a relationship where criticism is really present, it's really hard to feel loved by a partner who's constantly criticizing us. And it's also hard to feel love for that same person who's also constantly criticizing you. And related to what Jace was saying about how for some reason we feel more entitled to criticize our romantic partners rather than our friends, I'm not 100% sure why that is. I mean, I feel like that's probably a combination of holding our romantic partners to this much higher standard for ourselves. And sometimes holding someone to a high standard can be a good thing. There's also the super high standard that we receive from our culture of what a romantic partner should be. I think combined with the fact that, like, often you're just more exposed to your romantic partner than your friends, you know, especially if you live with them, if you're with them almost 24/7 and it's like, yeah, you get to see all their flawed humanity, everything from like their interpersonal issues that they're dealing with in therapy down to like gross, like bodily fluids and sounds to like weird annoying habits that they have. It's like, you know, you get exposed to that all the time. And I think that that can make it really easy to almost just kind of like your mind just kind of slowly shifts to this place of being critical of these things rather than being able to brush them off if you're constantly exposed to them.
Yeah, it's interesting because we've talked about like parents being critical and then us being critical of our romantic partners. And this may be a little Freudian, but it is that idea that like sometimes we act as parents to our partners in various ways, which I don't think that we should. But sometimes people do slip into those habits of doing things like that, especially, you know, you probably don't want to have sex with a person who's scolding you about not taking the trash out, you know? Yeah.
It's a real killer of that intimacy. Well, and
totally.
Affection.
Yeah. And again, that's what these articles and I think the Gottmans really get into and talk about is that it's not sexy to feel criticized by your partner. It's not, because then they become your parent almost.
But it's also,
and you get into that defensive childlike cycle.
Well, I was going to argue on the flip side is I think it's also not sexy to feel like when you're in the parent position, like it's also not sexy to feel like my partner is a child who needs cleaning up after or who needs to be told what to do with their life or whatever. Like that's also not very sexy.
Yeah, like I have kids, but then also my partner is another one of the kids. Mm-hmm. Like you hear that friggin' thing out there in the world. Yeah.
Yeah. So like, okay, because I could see some people listening to this and going, yeah, but what do I, but my partner's doing this shit that I can't just sit by and ignore it or have them, what, you know, take advantage of me or whatever, you know, however it's manifesting. So I feel like it's worth clarifying that this episode isn't about like you can't ever
be critical or
like have constructive feedback or ask.
There are better
for
ways in which to do it. Yes. And asking for things. I mean, there are much better ways to ask for something rather than just being attacking your partner's character or making a sweeping generalization about who they are simply because of something that they're not doing for you or for the relationship. So I don't, can we get into potentially like some examples of criticism in our own relationships, like romantic or otherwise? I'm trying to think. Yeah. Cause with my mother, I know there were a couple times, I mean, I said it in the last episode that she said that like, well, you're not a risk taker. Maybe because at times I was a little bit more, I don't know, cautious than she was in various things. But for whatever reason, she saw that as like a flaw. I wasn't a risk taker. And so she made like a sweeping generalization about my character. And I still remember that to this day. And it is kind of interesting because I don't think of myself in that way now, but I do have moments of being like, wow, like, did I not take enough risks when I was a kid? Do I not take enough risks now? Things like that.
Yeah. I'm trying to think of examples from my own life. I feel like it's often like that kind of generalizing into saying like, oh, well,
you always or never do something.
Right. Like, or not even just you always or never, but like you're careless because of one time that, you know, you left something out instead of putting it in the fridge, or, right. Like, or you've done something like that, that it's like easy to go to a judgment of sort of who you are as a person, of like, you're careless or you're selfish.
Yeah.
Like, I know that's one that I've sometimes thought about partners because of some little thing that they do or don't do. And it's like, my mind will go to like, oh, see, my partner's selfish. And like, even for myself, even if I don't say that to them, that's still even destructive to how I'm thinking about them.
Mm-hmm. Totally. Mm-hmm.
Yeah. My mind is awash. It's awash with both examples of being on the receiving end of destructive criticism and also on the giving end. You know, I've definitely no stranger to that. I think that we'll get into this a little bit later, but I do see myself as a very critical person, and I feel like this is the thing I have to rein in the most in relationships. And I know for myself that, like, I've learned for myself that anytime you statements get trotted out from me, that there's going to be destructive criticism attached to it pretty much 90% of the time. And so for me, that whole trick of doing the I statements rather than the you statements is really helpful for me to avoid that, maybe less so with other people. But yeah, so that's what I think of on the giving end from me. As far as on the receiving end, yeah, like, the stuff that I think about that's the most hurtful is when it's generalizations. You know, when it is like, well, you're just this type of person, or you just don't like to do this kind of thing, or you just don't like to, you know, whatever it is, or you really like doing this, you know, like, anytime someone kind of makes a generalization about just who you are as a human being, that's the toughest to swallow or hear.
Absolutely.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
Yeah.
So let's kind of go through some bullet points here of like, what counts as destructive criticism specifically? So I'll start this off, is that the tone of how it's delivered is important. Mm-hmm. So if it's a raised voice or like visibly angry or upset or condescending in your voice, another one would be starting a sentence with you always or you never or you should, kind of like Dedeker was saying, like you statements.
I added should in there because of you, though, Jace, because...
Should.
The should.
Wait, did someone deliver some shoulds on someone else? What's going on? Why did you add it because of Jace?
No, just that he hates the word should. Mm.
I think it's almost always a problem when it's used. I think it's almost always used for evil and very rarely for good. Even when we use it for ourselves, and I do it, I still use it, but I try to be more aware and not rely on should, because it's like should carries with it this kind of like a value judgment.
Yeah.
Of like, you should do this rather than maybe this would be a more skillful way to do this, or this might be, a more advantageous way or a better way.
Have you considered trying this way?
Yeah.
Right. But that you should, it's like this, there's some outside force kind of forcing you to do this thing. Like, oh, I should be better at this. Oh, I should do this more, is just not a helpful way to think for ourselves. And it doesn't foster other people doing what it is that we're saying that they should do. In fact, it does the opposite.
Right.
It makes them feel shittier and be less likely to do it, I would argue.
Another clue that it's destructive criticism is, you know, if someone's giving needless insults, and there doesn't seem to be a way to placate the person, because I think that's the other thing with criticism, is that sometimes it can be motivated just by hurting or just by getting like your own angry feelings out. And no matter how much you say of like, oh, okay, well, I'll do this or I'll do that, or I'm sorry about that, that the person doesn't seem satisfied, that can be a clue that it's like, oh no, this isn't like any kind of productive or constructive conversation. It's just destructive criticism.
Great example.
Hearing from a partner, them giving the caveat of, oh, no offense, but da 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 da, or, oh, not to rain on your parade, but da 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 da, before a comment. Or
it's probably going to be destructive criticism.
Or sometimes even don't take this the wrong way, but da 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 da.
But I think you are really terrible at this.
Yeah. You know, in the purpose of avoiding always and never statements, it's not always the case that if someone who gives those disclaimers and caveats that it's going to be destructive. But I know in my experience, usually anytime I hear that kind of disclaimer, I'm always like, ugh, okay, here it comes. And sometimes I've found it's a signal that like the person just isn't cognizant of how to give criticism or feedback in a way that's not destructive. You know, that like maybe they have a legitimate observation, but they don't know how to say it in a nice way. And so they have to give the disclaimer of like, oh, don't take this the wrong way, or don't let this hurt your feelings, but yada, yada, yada. At least that's been my experience. I don't know. I don't think that's necessarily representative, but
They should listen to this episode.
Well, okay. We're not going to talk about that. This type of criticism that's destructive is often filled with blame. So it can be something like, well, you're the kind of person who just gets really distracted and, you know, gets really caught up in new relationships and ignores my needs. And that's why I can never trust you. Like, it's your fault that I can't trust you, is because you're this kind of person, you know, that I think that it can be not just picking out something about the other person's character, but can also be a way of shifting the blame onto them for something that's going on. You know, or it could be something like, our house is never clean because you're a person who never cleans up after themselves, or because you're lazy, or whatever, things like that.
Yeah. Or you're just overall a messy person.
Mm-hmm. Right.
Which is hard to hear, probably. Yeah. And to kind of go along with that, again, it's these blanket statements that aren't focused on improvement. They're not focused on like, hey, can we talk about some ways that I can help you clean the house more, or that we can like come up with a schedule to figure out the chores for the home, as opposed to just being like, you're lazy and you suck or whatever.
Right. Yeah. That's, I wanted to comment on that because I feel like this is something that I see when working with clients so often, that there's such a big difference between the conversations where it's uncomfortable and we have to maybe call each other out on some bad behavior on both sides. Mm-hmm. But we're also focused on like, let's come up with an action plan for how this can be better. Let's come up with things that we both can do to make this better. There's that, like, that conversation is so different from the conversation that is just critical and not focused on improvement. That is just like, I'm just going to unload on you all of my years of frustration, or I'm just going to unload on you all the things that disappoint me. And then I just feel hopeless and resigned.
And
I'm not actually interested in figuring out a way to fix it. It's very, very different. Both conversations can be really uncomfortable and can be emotional and can have quite a bit of upheaval in them. But one of them, you know, heads things.
It's moving the relationship forward.
Yes, one of them's actually moving the relationship forward and actually pushing us toward like, okay, but we're on a team regarding these things, as opposed to, I think the other conversation encourages more of that me versus you dynamic.
Absolutely. Yeah. And to go along with that, there might be some belittlement or patronizing behavior. And again, it's like focused on the right way to do something. If there is some sort of improvement, you know, message going along with this, it may just be like, this is the way that you need to do something. This is the way that you need to load the dishwasher.
Okay, well,
and there's no other way.
Before you throw Jay's under the bus, I was going to throw myself under the bus by saying this is one that I have a hard time with, that I'm bad about this one because I just know the right way to do things.
Wow, look at that. There it is. There it is, ladies and gentlemen.
No, really, though. Sorry, I'm kind of making fun of myself a little bit. But yeah, that I think that I definitely carry with me this sense of like, well, I can just figure things out. Like, I know the right way to do things. And so this is one I have to always avoid, or try to avoid, is reminding myself like, there's many different ways to do things. You don't have the best way to do things. It's okay. Let people figure out the way they're going to do it. Like, it's okay. So
yeah. And this goes into kind of the next thing here. So,
Chase,
so those were...
I thought for sure you're going to be like, yeah, you're terrible at that. Like,
sorry.
You just seemed very enthusiastic when you're saying that. Yeah. And I was like, oh boy.
Here it comes.
Here it comes.
Well, no, I was just going to say that thing of saying this is the right way to do something is often a big part of this. And something that is really interesting is that I feel like most often people who tend to go that route with destructive criticism, that's more like, this is the right way, or you have to do it this way. And they might think I'm being constructive, I'm helping them. That the people who tend to do that, in my experience, tend to be people who consider themselves very smart or very put together or very skillful, or they just know the right ways to do things, or very logical, or all these sorts of things.
You mean Dedeker?
Yeah, I'm talking about Dedeker.
Yeah, obviously.
No, I'm actually talking about lots of people. I'm including myself in this. I've definitely been a perpetrator of this in the past, and like friends of mine. Mm-hmm. And the funny irony about it is that these people who consider themselves very intelligent and very logical are being incredibly illogical by approaching things this way, because criticism fails, like that type of criticism fails, because it goes fundamentally against these two really important factors about human beings. And that one is, it calls for the other person to submit. And as human beings, we hate submitting to authority, especially authority that feels unilateral and like unjustified. That it's, you know, we're not going along with something because it makes sense, but because we're told this is the right way, or you should. There's that should again. And then the other one is, it devalues us. It devalues our opinion. It devalues our own agency. It devalues our opinions about the way things are done. And as humans, we also hate that. So there is this funny irony of these people who feel like they know how to do things so well are doing this thing very not well, very not skillfully, and very illogically, because we're all human beings and they're dealing very illogically with human beings.
Very interesting.
So I think it's a funny little irony there.
Right. So it's like the idea that, like,
very good thing to keep
even
in mind.
If you think that you know how to do this particular task better or how to do it well, if you're communicating that on the meta level and not doing it well on the meta level, then you actually just suck. Is that is that the logical conclusion? Okay, so
that maybe you're just
extreme.
Not
just okay, if you're not doing it well on the meta level, then you're just, you're not as smart and as skilled as you think that you are.
Right. Okay. Right. Or perhaps you might know how to do one thing right, but that doesn't mean you know how to do everything right.
Yeah.
And then also, I think and I think we'll talk about this a little bit later too, but you also miss out on the opportunity to understand why they do things the way they do it.
That's a really good point. I like that very much.
And I know I've got one friend in mind right now who is very much this, of just gets real fixed in his way about what's the right way to do something. And particularly with his partner, but also with friends like me, you know, we'll just kind of tell them how this thing should be done or what the right way is to do this thing. And we'll quickly come up with reasons why any alternative solution is not as good. Which I think is really missing out on an opportunity to understand things. And then the second part is that sometimes the way that's the most efficient isn't necessarily the best. It's like we conflate this, whatever it is, orderliness or efficiency or quickness or something with goodness.
Yeah.
And those aren't always the same thing.
Yeah. That's so specific and impressive, like the devaluing thing. Dedeker's like having a moment over there. But yeah, all of those are true. And I think ultimately, when I feel criticized, the feeling of being devalued is the thing that hurts the most. And that is why I tend to internalize it so much, is because I'm like, fuck, like my partner thinks of me, thinks that what I have to say and what I do is not of value because they're criticizing me in this manner or telling me that what I do is wrong, and that really blows. So something for all y'all out there to think about if this is something that has happened to you, or if this is something that maybe you yourself do. We're going to dive a little bit more into what a critical person looks like right after this break.
Lucky Land Casino, asking people, what's the weirdest place you've gotten lucky?
Lucky? In line at the deli, I guess?
Aha, in my dentist's office. More than once, actually.
Do I have to say?
Yes, you do.
In the car, before my kids' PTA meeting.
Really?
Yes.
Excuse me, what's the weirdest place you've gotten lucky?
I never win and tell.
Well, there you have it. You can get lucky anywhere, playing at LuckyLandSlots.com. Play for free right now. Are you feeling lucky? No purchase necessary. Void where prohibited by law. 18 plus. Terms and conditions apply. See website for details.
For a long time now, we've been fans of AdamandEve.com for getting sex toys or lingerie or accessories, things like that. It's just a fantastic resource with a huge selection.
And now, not only do we have a fantastic offer, but we also have a promo code that will work on adammail.com and evestoys.com, which are their sites specifically for LGBTQ audiences. And our code is fantastic. It's 50% off of almost any item in the store and free discreet shipping when you use our code MULTI.
Yes, we love adamandeve.com and have for years. They are our oldest and longest sponsor, and they just keep on giving great gifts to us and to our listeners. You can bring more pleasure and satisfaction into your bedroom by going to adamandeve.com, adammail.com, or evestoys.com and select any one item. It can be, you know, an adventurous new toy or anything you desire, something fun, something sexy, whatever sounds good.
So just enter offer code MULTI at checkout and you'll get 50% off almost any item plus free shipping. That's MULTI, M-U-L-T-I, at adamandeve.com, adammail.com, or evestoys.com. This is an exclusive offer that is specific to this podcast, and it's better than any offer that is currently available on their site. So again, use code MULTI to get you not just the 50% discount, but also the 100% free shipping. Code M-U-L-T-I.
So, for all of you out there who some of this might look like you, or if you have ever asked yourself, or if you've ever been accused of being a critical person, what are maybe some things to look out for if somebody is like, you know, I think you're a really critical person, and you're like, no, I'm not, but if you're actually wondering, like, what does that look like? What does a critical person look like? Then here are some things maybe to look out for. So, number one is, you might be overly critical of yourself, and you might tend to speak to yourself in a demeaning manner, which is really interesting.
Yeah.
Because even though, again, like outwardly, you might be telling the world, like, I know how to do things right, you may internally be saying,
I screw up.
Yeah. I'm not as, you know, smart as I think I am or as I project to the world, whatever.
Yeah. When I was reading this before, like earlier today in kind of reading up on this, I read this one and I was like, well, fuck.
Oh, Jace, you don't have any well fucks to give. Like, just hold my beer on this one.
Okay.
Entire right. list. Right. Lord. Moving along. In the past, you may have had an overly critical parent. You may have felt like you never did anything right in their eyes. I definitely relate to this one. And it's funny because I don't look at my family as being critical necessarily. Well, maybe this is just, maybe this is my, like, me being an apologist for my family, because the way I always thought of it was like, well, my family just has very high standards.
Yeah.
That's interesting that's how I've changed it in my brain. We can analyze that some other time. But yeah, sometimes coming from that kind of background where if you felt like you were constantly receiving criticism from a parent, or if you felt like there was this just really high standard that you can never live up to, sometimes you internalize that and then project that onto the world. I know that I definitely did, you know, that I took like, well, this is just the standard that everyone has to live by. I can't live up to it, but everyone else has to. And so I also kind of in turn pay that forward into the rest of the world.
I once heard it phrased that it's like there's this standard that everyone needs to live up to, which, you know, includes all these things like having your shit together all of the time and always being successful and always being thin and like all of these things. And if you can't live up to those, at least have the dignity to be ashamed about it. And I think that's very much when I heard that, I was like,
hey,
yeah, like, I think that resonates.
You're like,
right?
I am
so ashamed about it. And I think that's where it comes from, right? It's like, I acknowledge other people might not live up to these just like I don't, but they better damn well be ashamed of it like
I
am.
Oh, geez, you know? Jace, you're really dropping the bombs on me today. Glad I have this hanky to fan myself with. This next one, I'm just going to keep on digging my own grave here. It's easier for you to find fault with something rather than praise it. Yep.
Yep.
That's, okay. Well, yeah, that's me.
I'm just gonna, just gonna keep going.
Great.
Here. Next one, you might micromanage or be a perfectionist.
Dedeker's like, come on, man.
The intensity of my fanning is increasing.
If something isn't done exactly right, then, you know, you'll get overly upset about it or only focus on the bad parts rather than seeing where the parts of merit are or what the good parts are. kind of like we talked about with knowing the right way to do something, that there might be good attributes of a different way of doing it. That it's just, if you're focused on this perfectionist, which to you perfect looks like what you think is the right way, you're not able to see the potential benefits of a different way of doing something. Mm-hmm. Or you're easily insulted or offended.
Now that's the only one I can dig out of my grave a little bit. That's the only one I don't think applies think you're to all me. Right. I think I'm all right there. I don't think I'm easily insulted or offended.
All right.
Okay.
So something to think about is that you might be harboring hurt feelings or resentment over something. And criticism might just be the first place that you go to because you're having a really hard time getting over that hurt. Mm. And I think this can happen a lot in relationships. Like, I mean, honestly, if people have a relationship that they choose to stay in where one partner cheats and then there's criticism constantly over that or over like, well, I don't know if I can trust you, or it always goes back to that because you're still like harboring this resentment and hurt, which is understandable, but then it kind of perpetually becomes the thing that is causing a lot of criticism to be like doled out.
Or criticism over other things because I still need to get back at this person for how hurt I was over this other thing.
Sure, absolutely. Yeah. And that's something absolutely to think about in your relationship. Like, why do I keep being so critical of my partner? Mm. What is the underlying cause here?
Yeah, that's interesting.
Yeah. And then finally, if others tell you that you're a critical person, you might be.
Maybe listen to them.
Or if you tell other people that you're a critical person, which a lot of people do.
For me.
Right. Yeah, it's like, well, I'm just pretty critical. Like, I'm not going to lie.
The Cosmo quiz on whether or not you're a critical person has ruled, and it doesn't look good for me.
Yeah. So, well, okay. And when we talk about defensiveness, that's the one that I am. So I'm defensive, and I'm also really mopey. And as my partner might say, I get in a victim-y place. So all of those things are something that, that I know that I'm bad at. So I may not be very critical, but I definitely am those other things.
So criticism can definitely go both ways. It isn't always just one person who's the critical one and the other person who's defensive or whatever. There are some instances where either partner can get into a pattern of criticizing the other, and then the other person gets defensive and then vice versa. Or I know, one I really had to train myself out of, and I like to believe I'm getting better at this, but a pattern I saw a lot growing up was kind of the whataboutism criticism. The like...
Isn't that a logical fallacy?
Logic
lady?
Yes. But this idea of like, well, I criticize this thing about you, and then the other person comes back with like, well, what about this thing about you that's also worthy of criticism. That was really present in my family growing up and definitely really present in pretty much most of my early adult relationships. Something that I'm trying to get better at. But criticism is a thing that it's like not only is criticism itself not very productive, it also generates defensiveness, which is also not very productive. And we can just kind of end up in this cycle of one person criticizing the other, defending, and then back and forth, and then nothing actually gets resolved.
Like, no one actually gets what they want.
Yes.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Which is ironic, because I think a lot of us tend to come to criticism thinking it's because I want it to be a certain way, and I want to get what I want, so I'm going to say this. You know, and we'll sometimes have good intentions, but what we actually end up doing is criticizing, which fosters defensiveness, doesn't get us what we want, and hurts our partner, and perpetuates this cycle.
So I think an example that I've seen, that I've lived and also seen a lot with my clients, is something where it's like person A comes to person B and is like, hey, you don't prioritize spending time with me. And then person B gets defensive, is like, what are you talking about? Like, I blocked out all this time last week that we spent together, you know, like, what are you talking about? And then even if that interaction doesn't go any further and no one says anything else, it's like, no one's still gotten what they wanted. Like, person A hasn't gotten feeling like person B prioritizes their time together, and person B hasn't gotten feeling like person A acknowledges the time that they do spend together. So it really is kind of like a weird zero sum cycle where it's like no one really comes out ahead.
Yeah, it's interesting in both of those scenarios where I think that so often people just want to be heard and understood. Mm-hmm. And like person A in that scenario is like, I feel like you don't value our time together. And when they're really, they want to be heard because they feel lonely or as though their partner maybe is more excited about, you know, someone new that they're dating, for example. And person B wants to be acknowledged with all of the time that they are giving to person A, and they want to be understood for that. Mm-hmm. So I think that we're going to get into this next is that there are ways in which to like fight better and to actually ask for what you need and try to have the ability to give your partner what they need in those moments. But even like just assessing those things for yourself, like, why am I being critical here, is potentially, it's really difficult for some people.
Yeah, definitely. Well, shall we get into this list here?
Sure.
How to improve our criticism, make it constructive, make it more, also maybe let go of some of the need to be right and instead focus on getting what we actually want and what we need, as opposed to just punishing someone for not giving it to us. So, this number one here.
This is a list we got from somewhere, right?
Yeah, from psychcentral.com.
Okay, just wanted to make sure we've also added a little bit to it.
So
yeah,
you won't get this list 100% from them.
No, but they just have some of this. They have six easy ways to stop criticizing and improve your relationships, but we had added a seventh or an eighth thing?
I think a seventh thing.
Yeah, a seventh thing. So, okay. Do a couple of them,
that multi-amory special sauce.
Yeah.
All right. So,
little dabble do ya.
Yeah.
Yeah.
So the first thing is to be realistic. So
I put yours in here. Sorry.
I hate this, Emily.
What? I mean.
Okay. Okay. Hang on. I'm just going to preempt it by saying what a positive thing it is that really the only criticism we have of you is that you're so critical about loading the dishwasher correctly.
Mm-hmm.
Okay, great. So if your partner always loads the dishwasher, quote, incorrectly, realistically, they might never stop doing that. Maybe you just have a sense for dishwasher loading that other people don't have.
You do. You're the Tetris king.
Right. Maybe you just fundamentally understand dishwasher loading in a way that other people don't. So be realistic to understand that like they may never load it the way that you would. However, there's things you could do about it. You could choose to just be the one who loads it and instead ask for support setting the dishes up or rinsing them or doing something so then you can load it. Or just get over it and not worry so much about how the dishwasher's loaded. What's funny is this issue has actually been a point of contention between myself and my roommate, who thinks that he knows the right way to load dishwashers.
No. Oh, wow.
Yeah. Yikes.
So do you both
get really upset at each other over this?
Well, and what's funny is what I realized eventually after getting pissed off at him a few times and us arguing about it was realizing that the metric that each of us were using for what's correct is different. That just sort of our whole philosophy about cleaning and dishwasher loading and stuff, we just have different things that we value.
Huh.
And I think that's something that kind of what I was talking about earlier of if you're just asserting, I know the right way rather than understanding and valuing a different way to do something, is that you might just have different things that to you are the qualities worth achieving.
Well,
in dishwasher loading
for.
Or cleanliness.
I did recently learn that like your family of origin has particular standards around dishwasher loading as well. And when I learned
that...
Yeah,
I was brought up with
this. Yes, when I learned that, I was like, oh, it makes so much more sense.
Yeah, that does make sense.
Yes.
But Dedeker, you also know, like, you know what? I'm just going to leave it to y'all. I'm assuming, because that's what I would do ultimately. Yeah.
Right. But what I'm trying to get at, though, through my experience with my roommate, is understanding that first of all, that just that like there could be different criteria for determining what's good, like what makes a way of doing something good. And that we don't have to have the same ones necessarily. However, you're going to get along better if you're able to at least respect each other's metrics for goodness. Perhaps that means that you can find a compromise, or perhaps it means we agree to disagree, but I can at least acknowledge that you have a way of doing something and you haven't died yet. So clearly it works to a certain level, and maybe that's okay. Mm. Right? Maybe that's acceptable.
Is that some metric if you haven't died yet?
Yeah, you haven't died from loading the dishwasher yet. So it's okay. It's worked out. And then that goes into this next one, which is respecting their autonomy. And that's something that, gosh, which episode was this where we were talking about, it was a few weeks ago where we were talking about, public health messaging.
Oh, right.
And that,
yeah, it was
like
about,
ads that are like anti-smoking
rules,
or something.
And agreements featuring boundaries.
Yes.
Yeah. That respecting someone's autonomy means putting that caveat of like, you can do this however you want, right? Like I might have some suggestions, but I also, you don't have to do it my way.
Yeah.
And that actually will make someone more willing to, you know, want to do it in a way that pleases you.
Because again, they're not submitting to the one way to do it.
Yeah. It's like you give them a way so that they can win by feeling like I'm doing something good for my partner and you get to win by getting what you want. As opposed to...
So you're manipulating... No, I'm kidding.
Well, right. As opposed to the other way, which is I'm going to make you lose by feeling criticized and having to submit to me. Mm-hmm. And I lose by either having an unhappy partner or not getting what I want, or more likely both.
Yeah. Yeah. So the next one is going to be look for the positives. I think this is really important. Mm-hmm. If you see something that your partner does well, you should tell them so. And you should tell them often, especially if you are erasing a negative interaction. So, okay, what was this that you found, Dedeker? So successful relationships have a 20-to-1 positive to negative interaction ratio.
Yeah, that's on like an everyday basis, that for every one negative interaction you have with your partner, a healthy relationship has 20 positive interactions.
That's the ideal, right?
Well, that's what they found successful relationships had. We created this ideal. It was the Gottman studied healthy relationships and successful relationships and found this was the ratio of positive to negative interactions.
But if you're in a fight or a conflict, then you need to have at least 5 positive interactions to 1 negative interaction. Mm-hmm. That's just in the midst of a fight or conflict.
Yeah, I think as you're hashing something out... You know, that
I see.
That for every one eye roll, there's 5, let's say, times where you're like, oh, yeah, you're right. I totally understand that. Or like, oh, thank you for being willing to talk about this. Or, hey, let's try to come to, you know, you get what I mean. That it's like there's ways to have still positive interactions, even when you're in the midst of a disagreement or a fight.
Yeah. And again, this can sort of like flip the narrative of what is happening here within critical thinking, is that instead of being of constantly saying and talking about the things that your partner is doing wrong, instead switch that and flip that on its head and try to find the things that your partner is doing correctly, or that you're happy about, or that they're, you know, making strides even to give you what you need and what you want. Because I think, then instead of like constantly being critical and constantly saying all of the negatives, which is, as we learned earlier, what critical people tend to do, you're instead, showing your partner that you can see their work, the work involved in, you know, making you happy.
Mm-hmm. I've even found sometimes if I've had a criticism or something that I want my partner to change, And I'll be upset about something and I'll go into it and I'll think, okay, like, I do want to acknowledge what they have done. And I'll kind of start by saying, you know, like, I'm upset about this thing. I do really appreciate that you do this and that you do this other thing. And sometimes even like by the time I get through a few of those things, I'm sort of like, okay, actually this thing I'm upset about isn't that big a deal. It still would be great if you would do this or not do this, but it's like, even for myself, It's like acknowledging the positive things that they do. It's like, okay, actually, that is pretty good. We're doing pretty good now that I think about it.
I talked myself out of
it. I like that.
Another thing is to not take your partner's behavior personally. So try to assume that your partner has the best of intentions when they do something that annoys you, or if they do something that annoys you. I mean, don't do something and the not doing of it annoys you, or they screw up in some other matter, because there can be a multitude of reasons why something happens. I think I've shared on podcasts in the past that, you know, my critical nature tends to come out in this, in like holding people to this high standard of like, if I ask you to do something once, you're going to remember it and there's no excuses to forget. Or if I make a request once, you're going to remember to do it and you're going to do it right away and there's no excuses to not. Like, that's the standard that's kind of been baked into my cake, as it were.
the Dedeker cake.
And so that means, I think, I shared this example last time, that it's like, if a partner comes home and I'm like, oh, did you get this thing from the store that I asked you to? And they're like, oh, dang, I forgot. That it's really hard for me to not feel like, oh, that was about me. Like, oh, they just don't care about me. They don't care about my needs, or they're not organized enough, or they're not put together enough. And like, it's really easy to make it about me when it's like, you know, if I just put myself in that situation where I'm like, it's so easy to just forget, to just be like, oh, whatever, got caught up at work, or, oh, like didn't write it down, or, oh, like, you know, it's like such a normal thing. And so anything that you can do to kind of remind yourself not to take this behavior personally, is great.
Yeah.
Yeah. Next one here is, take a moment and consider whether something actually needs to be said at all. So try calming yourself down and reevaluating, do I need to speak up about this right now while I'm annoyed?
Halt.
Yes. Do a little mini halt for yourself. Evaluate. Is this something I need to bring up right now? Is this something that we could maybe talk about later? Maybe I should write it down and remember to talk about it at our next radar, or whenever we have a moment where we're talking about things. Or is it maybe not something I need to bring up at all? And it could be any of those. And that doesn't mean like one of those is the right answer, but just take that moment and evaluate it. In Buddhism, there's this three questions, is it true? Is it kind? Is it necessary? I think sometimes the is it necessary is always a tricky one to answer, but it's at least kind of a starting place of asking those questions. Like, is this true or am I just upset? Is it kind? Is there a way to do this that's kind? And is it really necessary? And I think those are great, very valuable questions to ask yourself.
Yeah. So the big one, one of the big ones here, is to learn to ask directly and respectfully for what you want. So, okay, let your partner know why you would appreciate it if they did something, why it is important to you if they stopped doing something. And instead of like calling out their character flaws, which is a thing that I think turns constructive criticism into destructive criticism, just like let them know what you want. So also like move away from stating things as absolute truths, such as this is the right or the wrong way to do something, or you should do it this way. But instead say things like, it's really important to me that the house be, you know, a really tranquil and clean and lovely place for us to live in. How can we figure out a way to make it that for both of us? That's something that's really important to me. Can we figure out a way to do that?
And this last one, this is a huge one for me, and that's to manage your own anxiety and stress, or at least be aware of your own anxiety and stress level. Sometimes critical feelings toward your partner can come up when it's actually about you. You may have something that's going on. You may be feeling tired. You may be feeling overworked. You may be feeling anxious about something. I know for myself, I've learned that like the amount of alone time that I'm getting directly corresponds to how kind and compassionate and gracious I'm able to be with my partners. That like the less alone time I'm getting, it's not even about like just me spending time with one partner, too much time with one partner means I become critical of them or something like that. It's more of just if I'm not getting enough alone time in general, even if I'm not spending all my time around that partner, then I'm much more likely to get annoyed and be anxious and be stressed out. And that manifests sometimes in being critical or being harmful toward my partner. So that's something to bear in mind too, is like, make sure that you're getting enough of the things that you need, whether that's alone time like me, or it's decompression time, or enough sleep, or you know, enough restorative time like meditation or yoga or exercise or therapy. You know, really check in and make sure that you yourself are taking care of yourself and getting what it is that you need, because that can really affect the way that you are with your partners. I've definitely found, like, especially the things that I thought were deal breakers to me, like things like a certain level of cleanliness or organization, that if I'm relaxed and I'm not overworked and I'm feeling pretty good about life and feeling pretty good in my body, that like I'm much better able to like, oh, the trash hasn't been taken out yet. Okay, whatever. Like, we'll get around to it.
To be
we'll
zen
figure
about
it out.
It. Yeah.
You know, like, oh, dishes haven't been done yet. Oh, it's okay. Like, we got time. We can do it. Not that everything falls apart, but it's just, it's much more, I'm much more able to be more gracious about and generous about these things if I'm feeling pretty good.
Yeah, I would agree with that one, that also for myself, it helps me to kind of gain some perspective on what are things that this partner or roommate or someone does do that I don't, that I really appreciate, that it kind of helps it for me. Like with the cleanliness thing is an example for me, that during times when I'm not feeling as overworked, which does tend to lead to me being a little less tidy and a little less clean, like leaving dishes in the sink or something like that, that when I'm in that state and then my roommates do it, it just drives me fucking crazy because they're much worse than I am.
Yeah.
But, you know, it's like, but then other times where I have a little more time, I'm a little more collected, it like actually brings me a little bit of joy to clean up the dishes, because there's that satisfaction of like, I did it. I don't want to do all their dishes, but if there's a few out and I kind of can maintain this like base level, I feel a lot better. I'm less critical of them and am able to appreciate more of the positive things. So that's something I've noticed for myself at least.
Yeah, no, that's fantastic. And if you were on the other side of all these things, if you are getting criticism from your partner, from a friend, there are better or worse ways to handle that criticism. And better or worse ways to learn how to, like, maybe not take it so personally. Maybe figure out a way to be constructive in, you know, how you both can move forward and get the things that you want. So we're going to talk about that in the bonus episode. And if you want to get a load of that, then become a patron of ours. In addition, we really want to hear about critical things in your life. If you are a critical person, if maybe you have felt criticism from your partner, if the two of you have sort of moved past that, how you have done so, we want to hear about all of that. So the best place to share your thoughts with other listeners is on this episode's discussion thread in our private Facebook group or Discord chat. You can get access to these groups and join our exclusive community by going to patreon.com/multiamory. In addition, you can share with us publicly on Twitter, Facebook, or Instagram. You can email us at info@multiamory.com. Leave us a voicemail at 678-MULTI-05. Or you can leave us a voice message on Facebook. Multiamory is created and produced by Dedeker Winston, Jace Lindgren, and me, Emily Matlack. Our episodes are edited by Mauricio Balvanera. Our social media wizard is Will McMillan. Our theme song is Forms I Know I Did by Josh and Anand from the Fractal Cave EP. The full transcript is available on this episode's page on multiamory.com.
Hey there! Did you know Kroger always gives you savings and rewards on top of our lower-than-low prices? And when you download the Kroger app, you'll enjoy over $500 in savings every week with digital coupons. And don't forget fuel points to help you save up to $1 per gallon at the pump. Want to save even more? With a Boost membership, you'll get double fuel points and free delivery. So shop and save big at Kroger today. Kroger, fresh for everyone. Savings may vary by state. Restrictions apply. See site for details.